Live from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM. We're located here in beautiful, hot today, Southern California. And we're in parallel with Turf's Up Radio Station in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Remember, everybody, Turf's Up Radio is the only radio station dedicated to the green industry. Thank you, everyone, for turning into the Water Zone tonight with us this evening. I'm your host, Chris Davey. Rob Starr, who you're usually listening to at this time, is off tonight. He's been invited to a Rick Springfield concert. So for those of you who know who Rick Springfield is, Rob is there. Rob's a longtime musician himself, and Rick Springfield is his very good friend. So he's a guest there tonight, and we wish him a really great time. But I'm not here alone, so I'm very, very happy to have someone who's co-hosted the Water Zone before here once or twice. I'd like to welcome back Miss Christina Delano. Christina, how are you?
I'm good. You're right. It's been very, very hot today, and I'm happy to say that we haven't had any earthquakes today either.
Yeah, it's been quite a week, and so the temps are supposed to get into triple digits for the next 4 or 5 days in a row, right?
Yeah, and on Saturday I'm in a terrain race at 8 a.m., so I'm hoping it's no more than 80, 85 degrees, because otherwise I'm gonna...
What time in the morning?
8 in the morning.
Okay, well, you should be all right. It shouldn't be too hot by then, so you should be good.
And
then
for
the listeners, if you haven't been listening to the radio in the over the July 4th weekend, several quakes here in Southern California. We all felt the shaking, I think, and it's been quite an event for those people up in the Mojave Desert, Ridgecrest, Trona area. A lot of suffering up there.
There's actually been quite a few. That the epicenter is Glen Avon, which is near where I am, and I think we've had so many I don't even feel them anymore. It's become norm.
Yeah, it's tough to say that one can become complacent about things like that, but after, you know, several dozen, it's sort of, whoa, it's just another one.
Exactly. Although, right. I'll take an earthquake over a tornado any day.
Yeah, guess you don't know what's coming, but I'm like most people, man. I'm with the other chickens, man. Knees knocking and I'm under the table when there's an earthquake that scared the heck out of me. So we have a pretty good show tonight. We have Miss Chris Austin waiting on the line to talk to us about California water news. But before we do that, we want to talk a little bit about the IA. And Christine, I think you have a little something to say about the IA awards.
Yes, I do. This past Tuesday, July 9th, the IA kicked off Smart Irrigation Month by announcing the 5 recipients of its annual awards. The first one is the Industry Achievement Award, which was given to Jake LaRue and for his research and development of Valley Irrigation. The second one is the LAIA's Innovator Award, for Monty Teeter. He started Teeter Irrigation in 1977, so 42 years ago.
Yeah, a long time.
Since I was 10. And the third one, going to the IA Board of Directors Award, which was to Carl Cott Jr., and he founded K-Rain in 1974 and continues to serve as the company's CEO. The Excellent in Education Award went to Marcus Duck of Michigan State University and his involvement with the IA's Faculty Academy. And the last award, the Vanguard Honors Award, is an innovative irrigation project, and that went to the Lindsay Corporation for the Riverview LLP project in Wilcox, Arizona. And we'd like to give a hearty congrats from all of us here at the Water Zone on these winners. And if you'd like to get more information on the awards and the winners, please go to www.irrigation.org.
Well, congratulations to all those guys.
Yes,
man, that's great. This is an annual event, an annual awards for IA, and there's been a couple of new awards come up. One is the Vanguard Award, so happy to see that happening. All right, so let's get on to see what's happening in the world of California water news, and welcome Chris Austin to the microphone.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're
good.
Great.
How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. It's been an interesting day in California water.
What's up?
We'll see where things are headed.
What's the big news?
Well, the Bureau of Reclamation put out its environmental impact statement for all these things that they have been planning for, managing the California, really the Central Valley Project and the State Water Project, the state's sort of version of the same. And so they put that out today, and they're requesting comments. Now, I have to confess, I haven't opened it up and dug through it, but these are some of the proposed actions that they're considering to be able to basically export more water out of the Delta south to, you know, farms and cities and all. The old rules are rather outdated, so, you know, new rules, I think everyone sort of agrees, are in order, but the Trump administration has been really pushing for much faster determinations of science on these things, much faster biological opinions. And actually, interestingly enough, according to these accelerated timelines that the Trump administration has been trying to hold all their state agencies to, the biological opinions, which would be the rules that govern the federal and state water projects, their operations in the Delta, they were actually due about a week or 10 days ago, if you're going to follow the strict 135 days. And so we haven't seen those yet. Although this is the environmental impact statement on some of these things that they're proposing, so there is a bit of a connection here, so maybe we'll be seeing those biological opinions. But, the real story here is the federal government is trying to propose some operations that are much more looser in terms of environmental regulations on the pumps, so they're trying to make it easier for more water to be exported. And the state is really kind of fighting back on this. And it's really going to be interesting to see the feds, these are two water projects that really have to be operated together. And the feds cannot propose one set of rules and the state propose a completely different set of rules, and it's not going to work out very well. So we're all kind of waiting to see what happens there. So
is that the only dissension that's happened this week up in the state capitol? Because we saw on here that there was a holdout vote for Newsom's water plant.
Well, there's one guy that held out, but it looks like the water plan is going through. And that plan is, it's been approved by the Assembly and it's been approved by the Senate. So, the Newsom hasn't exactly signed it yet, is my understanding, but I'm pretty sure he's going to. This has been one of his signature issues that he's been trying to get solved. So we can expect to see that sign from the governor. But, the problem is where the funding is coming from this. I mean, everybody wants pretty much, I think, in theory, they want to solve the drinking water crisis in the Central Valley.
Yeah, sure.
But, pulling the funds from climate change funds is not what those funds were necessarily intended for, so it really opens it up to a legal challenge. And somebody is probably going to say, you cannot spend that money for that, and that may put all this in limbo. But so far, haven't seen that happen yet.
I have a question on that too. On the more information on this AVID group, because I learned something new, that there is an AVID group of people who fish for sewer salmon in the LA River. How will this affect them, and what's their group?
You know, I mean, this is the fascinating thing. You know, we have this river that that flows through town, and in most places it's cement, but it's not cemented up in others. And there are parts of the LA River that are really quite wild and natural. I think some of those are around like Woodley Park. And they actually have people that you can go kayaking down the Los Angeles River.
Really?
You're not going from Canoga Park to Long Beach, trust me. it's a little part of it, but I mean, there is some parts of the LA River that haven't been turned into channelized concrete. And, you know, it's really interesting to see what's going to happen because, you know, there's a lot of focus on the LA River, and there's a lot of people in town that want to see the river restored to something other than a big, giant cement storm drain. And so they actually hired a very famous architect, I believe Gutenberg was his name, to design, ways that they could redo the river as it flows through town. Now, at the same time, Mayor Garcetti puts out a mandate that L.A. is going to try to be able to be sustainable on only local sources, which includes then recycling most or all of the water that goes to water treatment plants. But most of the water, almost all of it that flows down the LA River, comes from those water treatment plants.
Right.
Interesting.
So it seems like there's a direct conflict here. And, you know, oddly enough, as it would happen, as this water has flowed down the LA River, it's come to support habitat and animals and critters and birds and things like that. So, you know, I don't think anyone's really got into the middle of this and tried to solve it, but it's going to be a big issue. You know, it's going to be huge.
It was very interesting. I had no idea. So
I hope they practice catch and release. don't take that.
I'm not sure I'd want to be eating any of those fish, but
no.
But you know, people do what they do.
Yeah. So the kayaking thing was interesting. I do think, Chris, that you have to get a permit to do that, right? I mean, I don't think you can just go down there and offload your kayaks off your Pathfinder and stick them in the water and go willy nilly.
I wanted to go paddleboarding.
Right, right. There is a system where you sign up for it in a limited amount of people because, you know, you're kind of in the flood control channel and, you know, there's limits to where you can go. But you can go kayak the LA River. Yes, it is true.
Yeah, so that's a grand improvement from 20 years ago or 25 years ago when I was a kid and driving into LA. I wish I was a kid 25 years ago.
I was.
Just all kinds of junk and crap and old cars and everything were in that river basin. So, you know, kudos to the folks who have worked all these years to clean that up and make it good enough, reused, good enough for sport and for recreation.
And beauty.
And for the critters that need it too.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely. All right, so Chris, we appreciate you being on as every week and the insights you provide for us and for our folks listening. If you want more information, just go to www.mavensnotebook.com where you will find the latest up-to-the-date, up-to-the-minute information on water news in the state of California. Chris, got any plans for this coming weekend?
No, just hanging out.
And staying cool, right? So triple digits
absolutely.
Up there where you're at.
Be triple digits here.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Thanks to you, Chris. Have a great week. We'll talk to you soon. And we're going to do a couple of commercials here, and we'll be right back with an interview from the city of Yorba Linda, guys. Stay tuned.
K- KCAA Loma Linda, 1050 AM, K292 FQ Riverside, and K293 CF Moreno Valley.
If you knew there was a pipe cement that works better than the one you're currently using, is better for you and the environment, and costs the same or less, would you buy it? Oh, no-brainer, right? Weldon, the trusted leader in solvent cements for over 60 years, is pleased to introduce a new line of solvent cements that does all that. Introducing the Eco Series line of solvent cements for PVC piping systems. Not only does it work great and set fast, it also has 30% lower solvent emissions and less smelly fumes. A better workplace environment when you're installing pipes. But don't just take our word for it. EcoSeries products are the only solvent cements that are Green Seal certified for environmental innovation for effective performance, improved working conditions, and for use with potable water. Now available in a medium-bodied fast-setting blue formula, 905 Eco, and a regular-bodied fast-setting clear formula, 900 Eco. Pick up a can today from your local distributor and see, smell, and feel the difference, just like Joe Sweat, president of Sunrise Irrigation, did. He said, after using Weldon's 905 Eco, we immediately noticed the application was smooth and there was noticeably less odor than other blue solvent cements on the market. The guys love it. To learn more about Eco solvent cements from Weldon, visit the website at www.weldon.com or call the technical service hotline at 877-477-8327. That's 877-477-8327.
All right, our next guests are two wonderful people. One is the new mayor of the city of Yorba Linda, Ms. Tara Campbell, and Mr. Phil Hawkins, who's on the board of directors of Yorba Linda Water District. So we'd like to welcome both to the Water Zone. So good morning to both of you.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning.
Okay. So we'll start off with the mayor. Got some interesting information about her that she, I guess I'll just straight out ask, how does it feel being the youngest female mayor ever in California?
It is great to really be mayor of my hometown. I'm born and raised here in Yorba Linda. It's a great city, so to have the faith of my community to lead our city is just a really great honor.
What fascinated you to enter the political arena?
Yeah, I did not think I was going to be doing politics, let alone be mayor of my hometown at all. I actually went to USC to be a sports journalist, but an internship in D.C. Kind of made me shift gears because I was out there and the government shut down. This was in 2013 over healthcare. And then I came back to my hometown in the midst of a recall of our city council, and I was like, wait, this gridlock that happens at the national level can happen on the local level too? And realized we need some good people in government, and so I kind of shifted gears and started getting involved in my local community. And I don't know how it happened, but now I'm mayor.
Be careful what you wish for, right?
Yeah, I know, right?
Hey, so before we get into, you know, some water issues, conservation programs and things like that, Tara, maybe give us a little bit of history about the city of Yorba Linda, right? Some of the specs or demographics, if you will, about the city, how it got its name, that sort of a thing.
Yeah. Well, the city of Yorba Linda got its name because of the Yorba family. Jose Yorba was a member of the Spanish expedition, actually. But in 1907, they sold the land, and it became the new town, Yorba Linda. Yorba, obviously, after the family's name, and then Linda, meaning pretty in Spanish. So that's kind of the little history on Yorba Linda, but we've been an incorporated city for about 50 years now, a little over 50 years. We're about 70,000 residents, largely a suburban community. We do have some commercial centers and open space and parkland and trails. We actually have over 100 miles of trails in Yorba Linda and a couple historic resources. In fact, we have we're one of 13 cities to have a presidential library right here in Yorba Linda, so Nixon Presidential Library. So that's a little background on the city of Yorba Linda.
Well, I just for Christmas Day, my wife went to school with the Yorba's granddaughters and used to go to Grandpa Yorba's ranch when it was out in the
boondocks. Oh, wow.
With oranges and such. So she's real friends with the granddaughters and great-granddaughters of that, so it's pretty interesting. She grew up in Anaheim, that's where she went to school with the Yorba granddaughters.
Yeah, I had friends in Yorba Linda as well, and I'd go down there as a kid or a teenager and ride my Schwinn bicycle all through the orange groves, lemon groves, right, with filled little mounds and jump our bikes and things like that.
My wife used to have orange fights. I guess they used to go there and take the oranges off the trees and throw them at everybody. So.
Yeah, we go down there lately. Everywhere we used to ride our bikes is now home.
Yeah, it's amazing. Oh, city's done great. So on conservation, aside from water, which we'll get into with Mr. Hawkins, what type of conservation programs does the city offer or promote?
Yeah, we've done a lot really on energy conservation. In fact, we became a member with our North Orange County City Partners to form this City Energy Partnership, which is really a coalition of all of us in North Orange County working towards trying to implement and identify energy efficient projects for the region. So not only doing it within our own city, but collectively as a region. And we've done a lot of, changing out our traditional lights to make them more energy efficient. We've been very proactive in that and actually using grants to do that, which has been incredibly helpful because, like most cities, especially Yorba Belinda, we're a contract city, so we don't have a ton of funds, but there's a lot of grants out there to become more energy efficient, and we really try to take advantage of that. So energy efficiency is we've put a lot of emphasis on that.
Yeah. Does the some of our listeners might know the term MWELO, which stands for Modern Water Efficient Landscape Ordinance. Is that something that the city, I know the state is working on that. I was on their task force to help with that, develop that. But is the city planning to get behind that?
Yeah, well, we adopted something back in 2009 called the Water Efficient Landscape Ordinance, and we kind of amended it in 2016 to have it be in compliance with MELO because we did want to be a part of that. In fact, we've done a lot in these past couple of years to make all of our landscaping drought tolerant, really changing out, eliminating turf and replacing those areas with drought tolerant planting. Obviously we had a major drought and I'm sure, Phil can go into all the water conservation efforts, but California was in a major drought and each of the cities had to comply with that. And so our landscaping took a beating. And so making sure that all our landscaping going forward is drought tolerant is going to be really critical for us.
Yeah. I know the new center that opened in that's the day I met you for the opening of the new market and everything up there. I noticed everything, all the plantings up there are all geared for low water usage.
Yeah.
And that I'll tell you, that center is just done great since it's open. And I guess there's more. I'm waiting for that new restaurant called The Blind Pig.
Yeah, we're very excited.
It sounded, I read some things online, and it sounded pretty interesting to go to. But I've been to all the restaurants up there, and it's a really nice place.
Yeah. Hey, so Tara, we know historically, at least in Southern California, right, a lot of cities for many, many years now, decades even, have been dealing with water conservation issues. So is Yorba Belinda sort of typical for that, realized the efficiency of water programs, conservation programs, and the like back 10, 20 years ago? So with that in mind, what kind of role does water play in the future growth and sustainability for the residents and just for commercial growth in your Belinda?
Well, it's incredibly important. In fact, and so I talk about this too, we just attended a ribbon cutting for the new Fairmont booster pump station for the water district invested in, and that's going to be very helpful going forward. But it's really about having a reliable water supply for, the future growth and sustainability of our city. Clean, safe, reliable water is probably, if not the most important thing in a community
yeah.
that we take for granted. I started this Young Civic Leaders program in our city for all high school age kids in Yorba Belinda to go every week over a different aspect of city government. And one of the weeks we had them tour the Yorba Belinda Water District infrastructure and how does the water come, where does the water district get its sources of water and how does
right.
it make it to the process of when you turn on that faucet, it comes into your home. And the students were really in awe of that, but we often take it for granted. We just expect that when we turn the faucet, the water's going to come. So having a clean, safe, reliable water is critical for the future of our city.
So So what are your thoughts or hindrances in installing recycled or non-potable water in your city? Would the cost of increasing these items be paid by the water district, the city, both, or?
I think Phil and I would have to have a discussion with our boards, right, to figure out how it would get paid for. But I have no reservations about that. We do have in Yorba Linda Black Gold Golf Club, so we have we own a golf course. That would be the only one I think that would be very difficult to do if we did have lower quality and how it would affect the soil and turf of that. I don't have any reservations, but I think that would be definitely a discussion that would have to happen between both the water district and the city, because we are the largest customer for the water district, and so that would have to be a joint conversation, obviously.
We've had a couple of events at the Black Gold Country Club in the green industry, and including the Green Industry Hall of Fame, which was a couple of years ago. And by the way, Rob, right across the table from me here, is a newly inducted member of the Green Industry Hall of Fame as of this year.
Wow, congrats.
Thanks. I didn't feel I deserve it, but I do appreciate it, and it was an honor to be inducted into that.
So let's see if we can bring Phil Hawkins in. Phil, welcome to the show. You've been kind of quiet here for a while, and we thank Tara for sort of the roundhouse view of what the city of Yorba Linda. So can you, Phil, maybe you can describe for us, you know, what exactly comprises the service area of Yorba Linda Water District, you know, how many meters you have, that sort of a thing.
Sure. So the Yorba Linda Water District covers almost all of Yorba Linda. There's a small part that is covered by Golden State, but I would say almost all of Yorba Linda is covered by the Yorba Linda Water District. We also cover parts of the cities of Brea, Anaheim, Placentia, and some unincorporated areas. That encompasses about 80,000 people. We have about 22 square miles of service area. We have over $1 billion of infrastructure in the ground, and that's our pipes, that's our reservoirs, and most of that is buried under the ground, and that's what I think a lot of residents don't see all the time. You know, they turn on their faucet, water comes out, and everything's good. You don't think about everything that the water district has that makes that happen.
Yeah, the infrastructure, right?
The infrastructure, is about about $1 billion worth of infrastructure that is throughout the Yorba Linda Water District.
Who owns the water district? Is it connected to the city of Yorba Linda or privately held? Or
no? So the water district is a special district that is not we're connected with the city of Yorba Linda, but it actually falls underneath the county. For those that have been around Yorba Linda for a long time might remember, the water district actually used to be called the Yorba Linda County Water District. The name change, I think, happened in the early 70s, but prior to that, it was the Yorba Linda County Water District.
Okay. What's your background a little bit, Phil? I mean, where did you come from, and what brought you to the water industry?
So I always had an interest in water. I'm not sure at a very young age, and followed what was going on. And even before I lived in Yorba Linda, I befriended a gentleman that was on a different water district in the area I lived in. And when I moved to Yorba Linda, I actually didn't even know they had a separate water district. You know, a lot of larger cities have the water district falls under the city. So I was actually unaware for a year or two when living in Yorba Linda that it even had a separate water district. Like a lot of people, the freeway complex fire came through Yorba Linda. And, you know, all of a sudden, all eyes went on the water district, because of some of the things that happened. And shortly after that, I saw, it was an ad in the paper that said the Yorba Linda Water District was going to be appointing a citizens advisory committee. And I remember telling my wife, I said, I'm going to put my name in for that. So I put my name in for that. I was appointed to that. I served on that committee for about a year. And then a gentleman that served on the Water District as a director passed away. And I heard that, I'm not even sure where I heard it, but I heard that the Yorba Linda Water District was going to be appointing to replace this gentleman. So I told my wife again, I think I'm going to put my name in for that, and I got appointed in 2009, and I've been on the district ever since.
That's a great story.
Yeah. Keeps you occupied, huh?
Yeah, it does. It's something, you know, so my profession, I'm the CEO of the Realtor Association, so yeah, I don't directly deal with water, but a lot of the ancillary issues that we deal with when it comes to housing has to do with water, so there is a nexus there.
Well, just a side question, since you come from the realty world, when the drought hit, how did that affect home sales? Because, you know, you want the curb appeal for your customers so they can sell their homes. Was that a big deal?
You know, it wasn't that big a deal. I think everybody understood what was going on, and you know, when every house you're looking at is looking about the same, where the grass isn't as green as it's supposed to be, you understand what's going on, and it didn't affect the market as far as you know, less watering in the outside.
I can tell you back in the late 80s when another drought hit, and all the high-tech companies in Irvine, like Western Digital, I go down the names of these big billion-dollar companies, the biggest thing they did for their property and their landscape, because, you know, they're big corporations, they spray-painted the grass green.
I've seen that when people are listing their homes for their pictures when they're listing. You see them spraying their grass green. And, you know, the other thing that I think people really realized that, you know, watering their outside grass every day and they moved it down to every other day, it didn't change a whole lot. You know, most people were completely overwatering and they didn't realize it until they had to, you know, cut back. And now going forward, we don't see everybody going back to watering every day. They realize their plants and grass can look the way they're supposed to look with less watering.
Yeah,
that's very common, and great to hear a story about at least your residents, you know, have paid attention and see what's going on. Overwatering is a big issue in Southern California for sure.
And your Blender residents have always been wonderful about that. When I first got on the board, we had a much smaller drought in 2009-2010 compared to what we experienced a couple years ago. And when just asking Yorba Linda residents to cut back before we had any kind of true conservation ordinances, informing them, we put some signs up around town, what we needed to the targets we needed to hit, everybody cut back. So the citizens have always responded when just asked.
Yeah, that's excellent. Well, let's see if we can talk about the...
Well, do you guys have tiered rates?
No, we do not have tiered rates. We have a uniform rate, so what you pay for per unit, which units is about 750 gallons, 748 gallons, you pay the same for the first unit of water to the last unit of water.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'll switch from Anaheim Hills to Yorba Linda.
and me from Claremont. We have tiered rates, and I have a half acre lot, so I'm very conscious about that.
You know,
go ahead.
We hear that a lot regarding the tiered rates because you know, we get people comparing us. Well, you're not like this community. You're not like this community. One thing, and I heard you mention you have a half-acre lot. You know, a lot of lots in Yorba Linda are larger lots, and it is difficult when you're trying to maintain your lot and you do have tiered rates. And so we've always looked at, in fact, I've always questioned when we looked at tiered rates, show me communities that have tiered rates that have larger lots. And there's very few of them in the grand scheme of things that have communities that have large lots that do have tiered rates. So we've always tried to maintain the uniform rate. So what you pay for the first unit, you're paying for the last unit.
Yeah, I was doing some stuff with the city of Beverly Hills, and I went with a lady named Debbie Fagone, who's the head of the water conservation efforts there. And we went to one house that had 7 swimming pools.
Holy cow.
I don't know what that person did, but he had a huge house. I can't even explain it to you. The 7 swimming pools in his yard, unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he was paying, he was at the top of the tiered rate, and his comment to the water agency was, I have lots of money, so I'll just send me the bill and I'll pay it. That was it. Amazing. I guess when you have that kind of money.
You know, we And we have a handful of those in Yorba Linda that say, you know, I'm always going to use all the water I want. I'm going to pay for it. But it is a small part. You know, most people understand that we live in Southern California, which we are going to be susceptible to droughts, and they're very conscious about what they do.
Yep. So you talked about a water conservation ordinance. Can you tell our listeners why it was created and what does it mean? And can they request an ordinance waiver for special circumstances?
Yes. So I'll first start off with your last part. You can request a waiver for certain circumstances, and those are usually health and safety reasons. But the state really came in and mandated. We had a ordinance on the books. I wouldn't say it had a lot of teeth at the time, because when we developed it, I want to say, and I'm guessing on this one, I think it was around 2010. I think I mentioned earlier, when we asked the city to cut back, the residents to cut back, they did. Now, again, we developed the ordinance to have on the books, but we really never had to come out with any kind of enforcement, because the citizens did what they needed to do. But in this last major drought, the state actually came down and mandated that every water district have an ordinance, and they actually have teeth involved in it. And, you know, I personally was a little reluctant to put the teeth in it, because, again, I mentioned the city of Yorba Linda residents have always responded when asked. And so we put teeth into it, but I would say minimal teeth, just kind of awareness teeth, you know, when you're getting a $10 penalty. It's just a reminder that, you know what, I shouldn't be using this much. I should try to cut back a little bit more. But we're not out there trying to run the district off of penalties. So it was just more of a reminder than anything. And our conservation ordinance is, it goes into effect when we are in drought periods. Now, we have recommendations like you shouldn't, even when we're not in a drought period, you shouldn't go out there and water down your driveway. That truly is a waste of water. But when we're not in conservation times, almost everything is lifted. So, you know, you want to take a little longer shower. You want to water your grass a little bit more. There is no conservation penalties that come in.
Have you found that the residents respond better to the sort of a gentle nudge sort of a deal rather than, you know,
the heavy hand?
Yeah, heavy hand.
Ours have every time. You know, when the state came down and gave Yorba Linda a 35% reduction in water as what our goal was, what we were told we had to hit, if not we'd be penalized. I was the first one to think, oh my God, even though the residents have responded in the past, that's a huge number. And I wasn't sure we were going to make that number. But you know what? The citizens responded and we made that number. And I was a little shocked, because again, that imagine everybody using about a third less water. That's a lot of water to be used, to be saved. And, they did it though.
Yeah, that's excellent to hear. So maybe, next question for you or Mayor Campbell, for that matter. You know, does the city of Yorba Linda do a lot of outreach, education, and that sort of stuff? And if you do, how do you go to your customers with that?
If you want, I could start, Mayor. So we as part of the Metropolitan Water District, you know, we do have a number of rebates we can use for different things. You know, and I should say we do everything through the Metropolitan Water District when it comes to our rebates, because we're a member agency. So whether it's turf removal, whether it's hardscape removal, hardscape we're putting in versus turf, whether it's, you know, every once in a while they'll run the rebates for washers when doing the laundry. You know, so all of those we promote through the Yorba Linda Water District. And we do that a number of ways. We do it by social media. We do it by direct emails. We started doing the last couple of years, we do an open house once a year. We're out in the community a little bit more giving talks. So, you know, that's our primary role in going forward. But, you know, when we're hitting those drought periods, what we're seeing is it's just not us doing that. It's every water district. It's, you know, our regional, our state, everybody's promoting it. And when that happens, the community does become very aware of everything out there. Our calls do pick up tremendously in the water district, asking questions about what they can do.
I know you're part of the methane, but do you have any different rebates than any of the big guys have?
No. Any unique programs that City of Yorba Linda is involved in?
So no, we primarily stay with what Met offers. In the past, we've added a little extra money to some of the programs when Met may be offering a dollar, let's say, per turf removal. You know, when we had some extra money, which I wouldn't say we have it now, but when we had it, you know, we'll add another 50 cents to it or something to incentivize people. But currently, you know, we're just offering what Met's offering.
Oh, okay. What was I know this has been settled already, but what was the city's and water district view on the proposed water tax, that safe, affordable drinking water fee, which is basically died in a budget compromise? Were you guys for it or against it?
We were completely against it, and it was nice working with the city. I believe, and I don't want to speak for the mayor, but I believe the city actually wrote a letter in our behalf, you know, saying that we were not for the water tax. And I think the compromise that Aqua worked out with about $130 million going annually for the next 10 years to help some of those struggling water districts was a good compromise.
Yeah. I mean, I always say on all the shows that it doesn't matter who the people are. I just can't believe that we allow people to have dirty drinking water.
And, you know, internally our talks were, you know, there's a handful, and most of these are small private water districts in the Central Valley.
Right.
And our talks among the water agency, especially here in Orange County, was, you know what, we could go up and fix the problem with a quarter of the money, with you know, 10% of the money that was going to be generated by this water tax. And we agree, everybody should have safe, reliable drinking water, and we wanted to be part of that solution, but we didn't feel the water tax was the way to go.
No, I agree. One of my best friends is Randy Record. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah, I know Randy.
And some of the other guys at GM over at Eastern and stuff, and I was right with them. I mean, I totally agree. I think it was an unfair thing to start telling everybody, you have to do this, and you're going to have to pay millions of dollars to fix it, when it really wasn't their problem.
Yeah, really, delivering reliable, clean drinking water is something that we know how to do. We know how to do it, right? There's no excuse there.
So on the tunnels, you know, that's a big deal. I guess Governor Newsom is now in favor of the single. Is that something you guys agree with, or would you like to see the twin tunnel?
No, we're fully in support of the twin tunnel. I imagine going through all this work. You know, you're putting these tunnels in. Let's just put two tunnels in to make sure that we do have safe, reliable drinking water. You know, you can shut one down, you can repair one, you can turn one on, turn one off. It makes complete sense. I actually think the governor's doing this to help trying to kill the project, you know, because he wants to start over from scratch, basically. And
yeah.
I think I heard the other day that Metropolitan Water actually has already invested over $300 million in this project. And to start over from scratch, really, you know, this is something Southern California truly needs. It also, you know, it has another aspect to it where it repairs the delta. You know, I'm not sure the future of it right now. I hope we can get this fixed, but from what I'm hearing from the governor, I worry that this project might be dead on arrival.
Yeah, it scares me in the sense. I mean, we had on our show the chairman of IDE, the company who did the desal plant in San Diego. They're the largest desal company in the world, and he was telling me it took 17 years just to get approval to start the project. And I'm with you on the twin tunnels. It's smarter to have more capacity and have what you need in case something happens to one or whatever. It pays to have it. I mean, I don't understand why they don't do that. But
It's a big issue. It comes up almost every show, doesn't it, Rob?
Yeah. As a
comment.
Yeah, it just amazes me. I know one of the biggest things, one of the last things we'll talk about is that I know here in Southern California, I live here, and so it's Chris, that when it rains, 90% of that water just goes down the drain. And, you know, I'd rather see money being spent on 100-year-old infrastructure that needs to be built with new pipes and have some new aquifers and water storage, because we're desperately going to need that. Again, we got to think for the future. There's going to be more people. There's going to be more growth. We certainly need all of that kind of stuff, and that needs to help. Chris, do you have any comments on that?
I love that saying that we don't have a water problem, we have a storage problem. Because, you know, when we do get these rains, which, you know, from what I'm seeing and what I'm reading, you know, we are getting less big storms. But when we get these storms, if we can capture the water, you know, it's huge. Now, Orange County does a pretty good job capturing the water. But what they wind up doing is the first big wave that comes down, it has so much soot in it, and it clogs up our aquifers to get into the ground, that they let that go to the ocean. But after that, they do a pretty good job of damming things up and storing it back and trying to get it back in the ground. But, you know, we need more dams, and we need more dams a lot in Northern California than in Southern California, or some of the dams that we have, we should try to raise these dams, because that actually might be more cost-effective than doing other things. But, you know, I love the saying, we don't have a water problem, we have a storage problem.
Yeah, we had another guest on a little while ago. He introduced us to an acronym, CSTT, for collect, store, treat, and transport, right? And so that's what provides the value or the cost to water, right? The water is, it's everywhere on our planet here. It's the same water we've had for 3 billion years, and it'll be the same water we'll have for the next 3 billion, knock on wood.
Yep.
So that's where the cost of the money comes from.
Yep. So. Yep.
Well, we're going to tell you about something that sort of we're promoting this, but I'll let Chris and I will do this together. We partnered, as you probably know, that the Water Zone is part of the Toro Company, which Chris and I work for. And we've been very, very lucky in doing that show and having it be very successful. We partnered with the Municipal Water District of Orange County. We're putting a contest together, which is launching on the 1st. It's called Extreme Water Makeover, and it's a contest for everybody that lives in Orange County, all residents, and the deadline for the entries is July 31st. All they have to do is send in a photo of their front yard, along with a short narrative, about 300 words, to our website, and telling us why they need an extreme water makeover. And the goal is for the future of water to use the water more efficiently. We've got great partners such as Howard's Appliances, Home Depot, NBC News, Kellogg's Garden Products, obviously the Toro Company and the Water Zone. And so they're going to get, the winner is going to get a complete yard, the front yard irrigation update with all the modern smart irrigation products, controllers, nozzles, whatever. EPA WaterSense and EPA Energy Star home appliances, and also low-flow shower heads and toilets. So that's going to come, I guess MoDoc's going to send that to you guys, and hopefully you guys will put those in your water bills and let all your constituents know that, and they all have a chance to win this. We're starting off in Orange County first, and then we're going to go twice a year we're going to go to a different county. And replicate the same thing. And this will be covered by NBC News, both TV and radio, and all the newspapers and such. So you guys will be getting that real soon. So hopefully that'll help stir some excitement in your city.
I look forward to it. That sounds like an awesome project and program.
All right, awesome. So the contest starts on July 1st, right, Rob?
Yeah.
And the entries will be sent to waterzone@toro.com. So for the listeners that are on there right now want to get a head start to it, waterzone, one string, @toro.com will be the place to send your entries and your 300-word write-up of why you think you deserve an extreme water makeover contest.
And we thought this would be great to whoever wins to show not only their neighborhood but their city and the county, look what could happen if you do the right things and use water more efficiently. And you don't have to make it hard. You don't have to, you know, we're not coming in here, you got to conserve, you know, we're not beating them with anything. We're going to show them how they can do simple things and make it work right. But anyway, we appreciate both of you, both the Mayor Campbell and you, Phil, to join us today and give us a little information about Yorba Linda. It's a great city. You guys also have a great tagline. It's I think it's, I'm trying to remember since I don't live there, it's the land of gracious living. Is that correct?
Yes, you are the land of gracious living.
good job.
Well, they're a neighbor city to me, so I support them.
Any closing comments from Mayor Campbell or Phil?
No, I just want to thank you guys for having us on and talking about this important issue. And I think Yorba Linda is unique in the structure that we have. We have a water district and the city. So we have a special district that handles the water and sewer. So having a collaborative relationship between both of us, which we have had, is really important. And looking forward to hopefully continuing to, throughout the state, provide more water solutions. Like Phil said, we need storage and pushing for more storage. Not a water tax, that's not going to necessarily help or solve the problem, but working towards real sustainable solutions.
Excellent.
Excellent roundup.
All right, yep. Well, thank you guys for joining us, and hopefully everything will go continually go great for you guys. So,
thanks a lot. Thank you.
Are you presently part of the irrigation industry as a worker or business owner? Do you want to learn how you and your staff can boost your knowledge and productivity? Then you should check out Irrigator Technical Training School. Irrigator Tech is the leading source of quality instruction serving all facets of the irrigation industry. Their courses provide a basic, easy-to-understand approach that raises the skill level, competency, and professionalism of landscape and irrigation personnel through practical education and services. Irrigator Tech combines classroom and real-life hands-on training, leading to a well-recognized certification that both customers and employers demand. Irrigator Tech's specialized courses can help you quickly become a certified irrigation auditor or a certified installer, repair, maintenance, or backflow technician. Courses also include certificates in smart water application or becoming a certified tree worker. Most importantly, all certifications are state recognized, and Irrigator Tech offers annual renewal classes to help keep your certification up to date. So whether you work in California, Washington, Oregon, Nevada, or Arizona, there's an Irrigator Tech class near you. For more information on how to jumpstart your career, call Irrigator Tech toll-free 866-614-1755. Or visit them on the web at irrigatortech.com. That's toll-free, 866-614-1755, and on the web at irrigatortech.com.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Water Zone Radio Show. We've just got a minute and a half or so left here. And so I'd like to thank Mayor Campbell and Phil of the City of Yorba Linda for a great interview. We pre-recorded that a little earlier this month to play back today. But we do have a couple of quick reminders for everybody just before we go off the air. July is Smart Water Irrigation Month, and everybody that's in the irrigation industry is aware of that and knows that. So I would like to ask Christina if you do just a quick PSA for them.
As Chris mentioned, July is Smart Irrigation Month. July is a peak month for outdoor water use and a good time to make sure you're using your irrigation efficiently. A rain shutoff device is an inexpensive gadget to add to your sprinkler system to prevent it from running in the rain. You can also improve efficiency by watering at the coolest time of the day. When it's hot or windy, more than a third of the water can be lost to evaporation. For more information, go to irrigation.org/SWAT.
All right. Thanks, Christina. And thanks very much for being our co-host tonight, Christina. It was awesome to have you on.
Thank you.
Thanks to Chris Austin as well. And I'm Chris Davey, your other co-host. Hey, it was a Three Chris's show tonight.
It was.
All right.
Chris
so
with a K
just
here.
One more reminder, guys. You can hear more episodes of The Water Zone just by downloading Turf's Upright